This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who hardly loses any toenails a year. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our Survivor recap here for episode number 11 of Survivor 42. And it was such an exciting week of Survivor this week where we had our do or die week. Ultimately, Lindsay got it right. We had the knowledge is power played and Drea ultimately went home. So it was a jam-packed week. We got a great Survivor recap for you here today as Ricard Foyer will join us, who was one of the incredible strategists in season 41. So I'm very intrigued to hear what Ricard is thinking about what he's seeing in this season play out, which is a little bit must be like a deja vu for him and the season 41 players. Would love to hear what Ricard has to say. So we have Ricard lined up. If you want to watch the video of this podcast, of course, you can check it out on our YouTube channel to catch all of that. Of course, that's also where you could see my Survivor Know-It-Alls with Stephen Fishback from a Wednesday night. Always a fun one and especially lively one last night. And that's also where you can check out my exit interview with Drea. I had the chance to talk to Drea. I felt like that Drea, it was a struggle this morning for her. I think she had been doing a lot of press, and especially maybe it was a late night of the yelling at the TV, watching it all play out. So Drea did a great job on the exit interview, but you could tell that she's rather hoarse going through all of this, but some good information that we got from Drea, of course, in the exit interview podcast. And then we will have from here our Survivor Feedback Show as Bryce Isaiah, always a great tradition here on Rob's podcast, to have Bryce come on and talk with us on the feedback show. That's going to be recording on Saturday morning. If you still have time to get your feedback questions in for that one at robswebsite.com/voicemail. And for the patrons, I will be talking with Anessa Hout. That is going to be all about what the future players are learning from Survivor 42 over on Survivor Academy. So be on the lookout for that. Before we jump in with Ricard, let me quickly thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Rob Has a Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Rob Has a Podcast listeners, whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, news, even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you the options. Now, that's something that you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. All right, everybody. I am so thrilled to have this guest here with us to talk about everything that's going on after a great episode of Survivor, of course, that he is familiar with, the do or die. The knowledge is power. He's seen it all. Please welcome back from season 41 of Survivor, the great Ricard Foyer. Ricard, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm so excited that you're here because I feel like, and we got a really great episode to talk about. And, you know, I think it's a perfect week to have someone like yourself here with us to talk about everything that's going on because, I mean, you were one of the guinea pigs that went through this whole crazy experiment last time out. And you're an amazing person to talk to under any circumstances, but especially this week.
Thank you. Yeah, it's hard for me to really pause when watching this new season and not feel like, okay, we did this. And so they kind of know what's coming next because they don't. They really don't. They're also guinea pigs 2.0. And so I feel like, as strange as it is with this really big time gap between our seasons, they are in the exact same boat. And it's really cool to see, and almost like a frustrating to see how easy it is to manipulate tired, hungry people because we're all doing the same shit under very different circumstances, but we're doing the same stuff. Like Omer did the same thing with the knowledge is power. Like, you know, it's pretty wild to see. They know what they're going to get out of us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll get into all of that. But before we talk Survivor, how's everything going in your world outside of Survivor?
It's great. It's great. My little boy Lucia is about to turn one and my daughter's about to turn three, which is so weird to me that when I left the island,
yeah, that's right,
he was about to be born a few days later and now he's almost one. A year has passed and yeah, everything's really, really good. I'm remodeling my house. I'm very tired of that. That's mm-hmm. kind of fun though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just normal life shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess with the birth of your son also comes like, I guess, the 1 year anniversary of wrapping up filming of season 41.
Yeah. You know, I was just filming a cameo a few days ago and I kind of in the middle of the cameo screwed the whole thing up when I realized because it was for Mother's Day. And when I was talking, I was like, what was I doing last Mother's Day? And I was getting voted out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh yeah. 1 year ago, I was getting voted out. Mother's Day. Okay. I was making all these connections because I kind of forgot about that whole period of time. What was happening in the real world?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a wild night on Survivor that we had basically like two of the big things that came up in season 41 happen in the same episode, the do or die and the knowledge is power. It seemed like that we had very different circumstances of the do or die this time around. And I wonder if you thought that they set it up differently in the same way that like with the hourglass twist this season, there was a lot made about how Jeff said, oh, okay, well, you know, we're tweaking it a little bit because, you know, as was widely reported, very unpopular with the season 41 cast, the hourglass twist. Jeff really seemed to go out of his way this time around to say like, are you sure? You sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to send Roxroy? Are you sure you're like, all right, this is power. And this time around, it's interesting. It's sort of like inverted because if I remember correctly, in your season, it was only Liana and Heather that sat out of do or die in your season. Tonight, in last night's episode, I felt like that Jeff really, I thought, explained the do or die a little bit more to the season 42 cast. And in this circumstance, that it was only two people that played in the do or die. Did you feel like that there was more done to sort of prepare the 42 cast for what do or die was?
You know, I don't know if there was more done to prepare, but the way he made me feel, I'm getting kind of goosebumps and a little emotional about it. The way I felt in that moment when being told about the do or die twist was very much, how will people judge you for feeling safe enough to not do this challenge? And so I didn't want to do the do or die challenge at all. I was just like, okay, I have an option here. I'm not going to do it. But the way Jeff made me feel was like when I'm putting out my hands are shaking because I just felt like I'm in a shit position either way, because if I don't do it, Jeff has made it so clear that I'm some cocky asshole who feels like I have all the best relationships in the world that I don't even need immunity. And the way he made it seem to them was so much like, you know, only one of you was going to go home tonight. I mean, you might not even need this. It was so much lighter. And everyone seemed, I mean, obviously it's just an edit, but everyone seemed to have this vibe of like, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. We judged Heather and Liana harshly for not participating because of how Jeff worded it to us. And everyone over there on season 42 is just like, oh, don't worry, Lindsay, you made the, and nobody seemed judged for sitting out or for feeling safe. And it's just, I don't know if that has more to do with Jeff's delivery or just who these people are.
Yeah.
Or who they're at least trying to be on camera. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's complicated also because I think it's also like perception is reality, where that in your season, the majority of people played. So it's easier to judge the people that are sitting out here in this season. Yeah. You know, it was the majority of people sat out. So it was like, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with sitting out. Most of us mm-hmm. ended up doing it. And it was Lindsay who was the only person who, and they seemed to be like very positive about that. Lindsay, like, you know, went into the challenge to try to take on Jonathan. Now, in your season, you're going into the Do or Die Challenge. I believe that's right on the heels of when Shan got voted out. And not only is Shan voted out, but also, you know, Ricard, you have my vote as she leaves. Did you feel additional pressure to have to participate in that challenge because of what had just happened?
No, I didn't. And even when I don't win immunity that night, I felt very confident that I wasn't going home that day, and not because of my relationships. And even though I did have better relationships than what you saw on camera, but just because of the numbers, I mean, that's the episode, I believe, when Liana talks about race and has like this epic moment in the show. And to me, that was the only thing that was almost going to change the vote for Erica to vote me out.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the perception of this entire real world conversation. But numbers wise, I was like, well, even if I don't have immunity, even if I don't participate in this, Erica needs me to stay in this game. Xander needs me to stay in this game. Heather needs me to stay. So that was like the one time, because the rest of the time I needed immunity. But that particular one, I felt very safe and very secure. But I just couldn't look that bad for sitting out.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of how Jeff presented that in season 41? I think this was to the audience and not to, obviously, because he wouldn't tell the people mm-hmm. about the players about season 41. But in season 41, Deshaun was feeling like that he was in a bad spot. He opted to play Do or Die, and then he was safe and got to the final three. That mm-hmm. Well, why is Jeff trying to change the narrative of what actually happened?
Actually, I mean, I do think that Deshaun was the one who was supposed to go home that night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only plan I wanted.
Yes,
that
was it did work out where he was safe, but Deshaun mm-hmm. did not, like, this was like was not his by design to go into Do or Die, right?
Yeah, correct. Correct. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why Jeff phrased it in that capacity. He definitely did not think he was going to be the first one to drop. Yeah. At least that's based on our conversation.
He didn't seem happy when he dropped out.
Yeah, not at all. It happened so abruptly because it was really just an accident in this mm-hmm. while getting set up to start the challenge.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely wasn't, you know, hey, this might be my ticket to be safe. He didn't actually think he would be participating in Do or Die.
Well, I do understand why Jeff would sell it that way, where it's like, okay, well, we have this thing where, it's like, okay, it seems bad, but maybe people could be using it to their advantage. Like, maybe mm-hmm. there's different levels of the Do or Die. But I came away convinced, and I really did like come away from season 41 thinking like, okay, maybe there is something to this. And the more we talked about it during that week, I said, okay, maybe there's something here. But I really walked away from last night's episode of Ricard feeling like, throw this out. This is bad. Do or Die. Do you agree?
I don't like the idea of it, with the fact that you can't use an idol, you can't use an advantage that you've earned in the game to in any way keep yourself safe. I think that part is a flop.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly don't have a big issue with Do or Die, because I do think, now, how he makes you feel by the way he words it, that's a whole different thing. And that's just your perception of reality.
Yeah.
But he gives us enough of a heads up. He tells us the stakes. You could be going home based on a game of chance. And he does use the words game of chance. I feel like I have enough information to make a decision. Now, whether I make the right one or wrong one, that's my fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
But he gives us enough of an out here,
yep.
The fact that we can sit out, that I actually think it's fine. I don't think it really goes with the idea of Survivor. I don't really think it makes sense for the show Survivor, which is a social thing. But you could throw in the social element of I feel safe and I have great relationships. I don't need to participate. So I really do think it's a fine twist. I honestly think the only thing that should be thrown out is the hourglass. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just my take on it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair. I actually do think it's a fair twist.
But now that people know it's coming, I feel like that if they have it in season 43, I think that you're going to see a scenario that's probably closer to last night where potentially, you know, you have like the whoever is sort of like the, you know, most dominant challenge competitor. And in every season, there's not always going to be somebody who is sort of like the prohibitive favorite to win these immunity challenges. I think that person will play. And I think that most people will sit out. And I think that it won't look very much like what happened in season 41. I think it will look a lot like what happened last night. And maybe they felt like, okay, well, hey, two people playing, that's great drama. But I think it's almost going to be an automatic win for whoever is sort of like the dominant challenge person. And maybe that's by design. Maybe that is what they want.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty, when I think back to my season, it's pretty amazing how quickly humans can learn from a past thing. Like, you don't need to see it 15 times to learn from it. The second we had Do or Die happen, our alliance of Heather, Erica, Xander, and myself, we instantly had a plan of, okay, if Do or Die happens next, all of us are going to sit out. So none of us are at risk. At least one person from the other side is going to go home because of Do or Die. Like, we were already planning exactly what to do for this twist. Like, yeah. it was in the works, and then it didn't come back, and we're like, well, this is good, but damn. And that was kind of the theme throughout the entire season. After we had the very first trek where we all decided on the beach who was going to go on the trek, right after JD got back, we were planning who was going to go next and how we were going to decide that and how that was going to benefit us, Shan and myself. And then they did it a different way where the winning tribe is the one. They always changed it, so we never knew what to expect more than once. Because they knew we were smart. Yeah. And so it's pretty fun. I can't imagine them bringing this back, though, so soon. I really can't.
I feel like they really like can't. It. I feel like they really, Jeff seemed really tickled with the whole thing last night.
And the fact that it didn't work two times in a row is pretty weird to me.
It didn't work to eliminate somebody. I guess.
Correct.
Do you think, does production want, and maybe they're just like totally agnostic about the whole thing, are they rooting for somebody to, you know, get, you know, the eliminated from the game on this? Or are they rooting for the person to always, you know, get fire and then we have a vote?
I don't know. And I think last night kind of changed my opinion on this. And I don't want this in any way. The integrity of Survivor is really, really important to me.
Yeah.
And even if sometimes you feel bamboozled or you feel like, oh, they didn't want me to win, they didn't want this, and maybe I do feel that occasionally, I felt when Deshaun did the Do or Die, there was just like a very odd thing that happened, in my opinion. It's not a big deal, and I'm not even trying to start no controversy.
Okay.
But there was something where when Jeff was presenting the boxes, the three boxes were in front of him. And if you're Jeff, the far right box was the safe box. And
last night it was the middle.
And so I was curious if the same thing was going to happen two times in a row, because he pointed, when explaining the rules to Deshaun, he pointed to the safe box and said, one of these boxes is safe. It has fire. And he's pointing to the box that actually has fire. And then he takes two fingers. Everybody, you can go back on Paramount Plus and watch this fucking clip. He points to the two boxes that are not safe and says, two of these boxes have a skull. And he's pointing to the two. And I was like, he is mentally, telepathically telling Deshaun which box is the safe one. And he chooses the one that he pointed to. And Deshaun was safe.
Yeah.
And so last night I had a group of people over for this episode and I was like, everybody watch.
And you guessed
everybody,
it.
He's going to do it. And then it was, he did point to a box, but I couldn't really tell which one he was pointing to, but he did the same thing with the hands.
Yeah.
But the camera angles were very different. So I don't know what actually happened. But the person was safe, and I don't know.
It might be subliminal, where it's like that he has to memorize what's, so he doesn't open the wrong ones, where it might not even be something that he's trying to do intentionally, but that is that is wild.
And that's the important part there, because that's why I talk about the integrity of the show.
Yeah.
I don't I do not think, I'm not trying to overread into it, but it is weird when I'm watching it, because I even remember being out there when he pointed to that box, because I'm in a different headspace than Deshaun. Deshaun's probably just like pissing himself. He's freaking out. Yeah. I'm like, did he just point to that box? Wait, did he point that box?
Yeah, because both times the show sort of like highlighted the person who's talking about, oh, it's the Monty Hall problem. You always switch. Even High last night. Oh, you always switch. So it's almost like that the show is sort of like recognizing like, OK, the optimal strategy is to switch, as Christian Hubicki will tell you. But both times the person did not switch, and both times they got it right.
Did everyone go to the same school? Because I've never heard of this shit. I've never heard of this problem. I don't know nothing about switching.
I think if you're on the Survivor internet long enough, I think it comes across. I think eventually you get to it, especially now. Now everybody knows it.
I had never heard of that shit. And I remember Xander saying at one point, prisoner's dilemma. When I heard that phrase, I was like, what's that? I've never heard of no prisoner's dilemma. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of this.
Yeah. I want to then ask you about, overall with season 42, have you noticed any other things that you feel like that they've done slightly differently from what you saw in season 41, for better or for worse?
I don't know if I would say... Okay, for better or for worse, the edit.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you don't know who Heather and Xander and Erica and I are as people, and the real like love we shared out there, at least, that's to me really unacceptable. It's really unacceptable that you don't know who we were, and that you don't know who the hilarious Erica is. Like, she's so great. And I think that's such a disservice to a year or 2 years of our lives of going through this process of being cast on the show, for us to not be seen. Like, why'd you work so hard to pick us? There's something special about each one of us. And for that to not be to come to light, it's pretty disappointing. So I'm very, very jealous of the edit that season 42 has. That doesn't mean that I don't think season 42 could... be seen as just a better cast. And that's the eye of the beholder. Everybody's going to have a different opinion. People prefer the 41 cast. People prefer 42. I'm not saying one's better than the other. Mm-hmm. But I do think you don't have enough information about 41 to really know who we are to judge us as people. I really do believe that. Now, the actual show, the little minute changes, I think it's just weird to see this idea of, oh, we're going to switch things just to see if things are different. But the specifics that are being changed are not really variables that leave chance. I'm trying to explain this well. You are manipulating them to make a certain choice. You're not just changing one thing and seeing, I wonder what's going to happen. It's you're going to get a specific response for this change. From episode one, when they did the puzzle or the bucket challenge.
Yeah.
That's not a variable that's changed. Adding two chances to get it wrong, or one chance to get it wrong, and then a second option, that is massive. The fact that you can write down how many things with chalk, that was not an option. You had to do it all in your head. You couldn't write in the sand. That is massive. And then only one person doing the bucket. You are trying to get a specific response.
Yeah.
You are not... just like, oh, we changed this one little thing. Wonder if they're going to choose the same thing. You know what the fuck you're doing? You want the opposite.
And you're going triangles.
And you're going to do everything in your power, manipulation-wise, to ensure the opposite is achieved. And that's where I'm just like, this isn't really an experiment. This is just doing the, like, you just want the opposite in every step.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what the question was, but
yeah, we're just talking about some of the differences between season 42 and season 41. Okay. So,
I do have one more thing about this particular challenge, though. I don't know if we're actually going to get into the challenge when Jonathan wins.
The do or die challenge. Yeah.
Or the do or die challenge. But I don't know if they were just very lenient with Jonathan, but he should have been eliminated for all the things he was doing with the movement of his body during that challenge. We were not allowed.
You had that same challenge as well. Xander won.
Yes. Right. So we had to have our back pressed against the pole at all times. And Deshaun actually arched his back at one point. And Jeff was like, you're going to be out if you don't press it. Like, he was very stern about it. You could not do these movements and these arches and then sliding down. That was not allowed. And so I'm watching Jonathan. Lindsay is stiff as a board, and Jonathan is moving all over the place. They actually show a clip where his back is not at all touching the pillar. Yeah. And I was just like, why is he not out? This is like actually what the challenge is. They made this harder after the Christian Hibiki season. They made this harder so it would go faster. And I didn't know if they actually made it easy, like rule wise, they took away some of the rules, or if they were just letting him go to make it more exciting. But he should have been cut out of that challenge.
Yeah.
He was not doing it properly.
I wonder if it's also the do or die, where basically it's not just he's out of the challenge, but basically, like, you know, very potentially like he's out of the game if you make that call. Or and also, like, I don't know how much necessarily like those things are sort of like, do you know, were they built like for different sizes of the players versus like tall or short? OK, so they are.
Yeah. So when we were in the holding tent before we go out, we all. So there's only one time. Just so this all makes sense to people, I know you've played, but we're in a holding tent because the camera people that follow us around the islands are the same ones at the challenges. And so that's the one time we're not on camera. We're not allowed to speak. We can't strategize. We're sitting in some dirt on the
lockdown.
Lockdown. And so we all drew rocks for what position we're going to be in. And then the pedestals are raised or lowered to our height in the order that we drew. And so, like, as we're out there, having the rules explained to us, like, there is a crew with drills raising the pedestals in front of us to make sure that the heights are correct for us. So they are made for us. And they probably had to do that because there were only two people playing. They had to rearrange and put them side by side. So it made sense for the camera angles. But yeah, they are made to our specifications.
I had one other thing about the do or die, and it's such a unique circumstance where, okay, in your season, okay, we know Deshaun is going to the do or die, but then you go back to camp and you still have to figure out, okay, but what happens if Deshaun ends up being safe and now we are going to have a vote? How weird is that to sort of be planning for a tribal council that may or may not happen?
It didn't feel very weird to me. It was just like, I feel like it's a hard question for me specifically, because the only person I wanted to go home was Deshaun. And I really was open to the idea of working with Liana in the future. And so, and Danny had immunity. And so maybe it would be very different for them having to figure out all this scrambling when you actually have options, but it didn't feel like there were any options. It just felt very awkward and uncomfortable that Liana knew it was going to be her. And she was just working her ass off with Erica to try and convince Erica for it to be me. So it really wasn't that awkward. I think the only awkward part was trying to keep morale up for Deshaun, especially when I didn't like him out there, which is so funny because Deshaun is honestly one of the nicest people I know.
Yeah.
And honestly, even though we live on opposite ends of the country and we don't interact much, he's honestly one of my favorite people from the entire cast. He is a lovely person. But out there, I didn't give a shit about him. And so, like, I was hard trying to be like, Deshaun, don't worry. You might be in the game, buddy. Like, you might be fine. When all I'm thinking is, please die. Die in the do or die. That was the most uncomfortable part, because he just seemed really sad. And as different a page we were on in the game, it was sad to see him be defeated, I guess is the word. That was the most uncomfortable part of the day.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Let's talk about everything that went on with the knowledge is power and ultimately with Drea going out of the game. So what a wild turn of events for Drea to spill the beans to Omer about the knowledge is power, and then ultimately have it backfire in a similar way as to what we saw in season 41. I would just love to get your reaction to the way that that all played out this week.
I wrote down immediately last night in my phone notes. I was like, why did she tell him? And then I had to calm down and remind myself that if you do something this big, and you do something that could change who you're, like, your alliance person in her mind is Omer. If you did this without filling him in at all, she's going to feel away.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. So it made more sense to me telling him. I just feel like this happening again. Two times in a row, somebody moving that damn idol to something else. I think this shows all future players that you need to share what the end result will be. Like, trust me, I'm going to get Mike out. But you need to either make up a new advantage that is not the real one or leave out all the details. Because you can't trust anybody. And so that's the big bummer there. And how would Drea know to expect this? Like, how could you know that your closest ally is really going to use this information against you? But I don't fault Drea for telling him. I think she needed to. I really do think she needed to tell Omer about an advantage.
Yeah.
Just maybe not all the details of the advantage.
Yeah. No, I hadn't heard anybody say that before about how, you know, you're working with people very closely, you know, and especially in this world of, like, you know, live tribals and everything is, like, very, like, unpredictable. And you don't even know what other advantages are in the game. You know, you wouldn't want to necessarily do something like that so big and not give a heads up to the people you're working with the closest, especially at this late stage of the game.
Yeah, I really think maybe she would have made it one more day, but it would have been detrimental to show how well she was able to hide that and lie about it and send her troops into tribal to go through this, like, to try and get Mike out without all the information of what could have gone wrong. I think it could have made her look bad to her alliance. Obviously, her alliance wasn't on her side, but if they were, it could have been hurtful enough that it could have ruined any close relationship she had.
Okay, so Omer ends up with taking Mike's idol from this tribal council. As I was preparing for our conversation, I started to think about how, like, well, I do recall a time when you were holding an advantage for another person.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, how do you think that the exchange between Mike and Omer will go following this tribal council? Do you think that Mike will come back and immediately have tribal council like, hey, I'm ready for my idol back now? And do you think that Omer will be so quick to return it to him?
I do. And I think it's because of who I think Omer will give it right back. And it's because of who Omer is. I think he understands that he is one of the brightest people out there.
Yeah.
And he knows how to use his either true or not true information to get what he wants. And so for me, it was difficult wanting to give it back to Shan because first she was using my own ploy against me of why I needed to give it back to her. Mm. And so that was silly. But she was so unpredictable to me. Mike seems very predictable. He's been very, and I don't mean that in a rude way at all. It's just Mike has been predictable this entire season. He has an idea of what is important to him. If somebody crosses that, then they're on his shit list, and then he moves on to the next person. Like, we've seen this from the very beginning with Roxroy and Lydia and Hi and, you know, who's next? And so I think Omer knows enough about who Mike is that he can give it right back and it not be an unknown variable so much. I think he will give it back. I don't think there'll be any hesitation there. I really don't.
Do you think, or did you think at all, that maybe the play might have been to vote out Mike in that spot? Once you've taken Mike's idol, vote him out of the game.
I'm actually pretty surprised Omer did not do that. Because he knew that Drea was going to use the extra vote and he knew that she was going to use the knowledge as power. So now you have two things out of the game and you have an idol. And now Drea already trusts you. Like, you could have had somebody who's really tight with you. It was pretty surprising to me that he didn't vote out Mike, but I'm also evil and I have no problem voting out somebody to keep somebody.
I wonder, could the move have been if you did do that? And, at the end, the downsides, I think, would be one, you're sending Mike to the jury, who's going to be very, very sorry. You just mentioned about how you get on Mike's list and you don't come off it. Mm-hmm. And now he's on the jury. And now good luck at the final tribal council. And then also you have Drea, who now Drea told you when she was going to make a big move. Now, you didn't give her a heads up of what was about to happen. Could you spin it, though, to Drea after the fact, like Mike was coming for you? He was trying to get us to, to get you out. I guess Drea wanted him to go out. So I guess she wouldn't have been mad, right?
Well, she would have been mad that the idol was moved in the first place and she was being made the fool.
Yeah, you didn't tell me about that. That's what she'd be mad about. Yeah,
she would be mad about that. But I think if he was able to explain, I do think there is a workaround with this.
Yes.
And being able to go up to Drea and be like, look, I know that I made you use your knowledge as power. You didn't get an idol out of it. But I now have this idol. You don't have a target on your back for you having the idol.
Yeah.
And it made you look weaker in front of people. Like, I think there is a way, and Omer has a way with words, that he could have done this.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, Drea probably would have been pretty pissed, but they could have still come back together. An idol still be in play between the two of them. And I think something could have come out of it. And he could have also convinced her that that was the only way to get. I don't know. I think there's a way you could have done it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I do.
I've been very impressed with what Omer has been able to do this season in terms of keeping his threat level low. And this was a problem I think that you had run into in your season, where after the big move to take out Shan, then it seemed like, at least from where I was sitting watching this show, that you had really been sort of like out in front as, okay, well, now Ricard is the biggest threat. And then it was kind of open season for people coming for you, where Omer, I feel like to this point, has been able to largely avoid that. Do you think that is something that's like really important for people now in this new era of the game to worry about?
Yeah, I do. And now I'm not trying to. I made a very big mistake in not focusing on my threat level. That is 100% a self-inflicted thing for me. And so I'm not trying to use the circumstances as an excuse for myself, but I do think every player in this season is in a better position going into this merge situation because it was equal tribes going into the merge.
Yeah.
For me, it was only Shan and myself. We were the only two left. We're already going to look like threats. And that was a big piece. Like, how did you two make it to the end? And it's hard because with Shan being as amazing as she is, and everyone just loves her so much, and I don't have that kind of power with me. I feel like I'm funny. And if you know me in real life, I'm funny and I'm fun to be around, but I'm not the person that you're like, God, I just want to be that person's friend. And she has that. And so my entire first half of the game was me against what I wanted to do. I didn't want to talk about how good I was in the game. but I felt like I needed to, because if I didn't constantly remind people that I was the one pulling the strings, then I would always be seen as her minion and it wouldn't matter getting to the end because it would seem like I did nothing. I had to talk about all the moves I made constantly. Now, where my mistake was when Shan was gone, I didn't stop that. I continued like, oh, did you see I did that? Did you see I did that? I just continued to feel like I needed to prove myself. Omer, he doesn't have a person next to him that is seen as so amazing at the game that he needs to vocalize it constantly. He can just go to the end and then tell everyone what he did. And they'll believe him instantly. Nobody would believe my ass if I was sitting next to Shan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he is in a better position there in that sense. And I just think he's very aware and he'll be able to remind everyone of every single conversation. If he does make it to Final Three, he'll be able to remind everyone of every conversation of right there, Mike, when we were at the pizza thing, that's how I got high out because of that conversation. You know, when we were over here, that conversation. He has such a way with words that he would be able to win without showing all of his moves throughout every single day. Like I felt like I needed to do. I really did because I thought I was going to go to the end with Shan. So I thought I had to do that.
And do you feel like that in the way that the final tribal council format is that there is enough air there for Omer to be able to get those conversations out and not just be sort of like on defense dealing with, Omer, did you even do anything? Like if people haven't seen what he did?
I actually don't think so. I think he could make it happen, but I don't think there is enough space in this current format of tribal because we don't have watches out there,
mm-hmm.
but nobody got to make a big speech. No one got to really dive into their conversations. Final Tribal went very, very fast. And I felt like there were a lot of opportunities that were taken away from the players to really talk about the final three, to talk about why they did certain decisions. Like I remember Xander trying to make a speech at one point, explaining every move that he had made. And he was cut off by Jeff saying like,
yeah,
this isn't the time for that. And he never got another opportunity.
Is there a better time?
I know, but yeah. like it was pretty wild. I was like, wait, so when, okay, I wasn't going to vote for him anyway, right. But wait, he didn't get to talk about the things he felt he did. And so I actually think it could be time-wise very difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, do you have a, I know you said you don't have a watch, but did you have a sense of how long is the final tribal council? Because I'm wondering maybe if they're trying to like keep it tighter because we got to get to the reunion.
Honestly, like I really mean, I think it was less than an hour.
Yeah.
It felt so fast. Not all of us asked questions. We had all pre-planned who was going to ask a question or what our questions were. I remember I had three. I actually just found the piece of paper when I was cleaning out my closet of what my three questions were. And I only asked like two of them. I think it went so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they rolled out the pizza and the champagne. And I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. Why is everything just felt so fast? Because then Jeff was there. He gave each of us a hug. After the reunion, we had a little party and then he was gone.
Yeah.
I think it was there like 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's a new era.
Yep. He got places to go. He had to hop on his yacht.
Get ready. We got new people coming in a couple of days. So give me a sense of where you think the game goes from here, because the thing that I'm really trying to unpack at this point is is the Taku 4 actually a more dominant thing than we're being shown in the edit?
I honestly just don't know where everyone goes. I was really trying to just sit down. Now I'm like lounging in my chair. Sorry. I was trying to sit down and be like, what is everyone's end game now? Cause Lindsay is against Jonathan and that was her type person. And now she's seen as lovable and good at challenges, but she hasn't won any challenges. So what's her story? And then Omer is just like putting targets on every single person's back. And even though I think he could win at the end, he is just painting everyone to be such a threat and not himself. Everyone's just going to think of everybody else as being a bigger threat than him and a bigger deal to mm-hmm. win. And Mike, Mike is just all, I honestly, my mind is spinning with these people of what they are anticipating their story being and who they want to go to the end with. I feel like I don't have an idea of who anybody really wants to be at the end with. I especially don't know who Omer wants to be at the end with.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Mike, but then this episode, he's all about, well, now Mike is high on high, if you know what I mean. And I'm like, wait, I thought you wanted to work with Mike. Now you want Mike gone? Mm-hmm. Wait, what are we doing? I'm just pretty confused about what everyone's intentions are. And that's, I don't think that's a fault of theirs. It's just, there's a lot of stories going on and you're seeing a lot more camp life than you have in at least my season, mm-hmm. that you get to be confused about what's going on, as opposed to mine. There were like two groups battling against each other and you're just trying to be the last one standing of that group.
Do you see any sort of daylight for Romeo? Because I would love to get your take on where he stands in the game.
With Romeo, I love Romeo a lot. I just love his like attitude. Yeah. But he always just somebody was over at my house last night. I had never met them and they came with a friend. And I love hearing a new person's perspective. This is only their second season watching. And they were just like, I bet Romeo's going to be confused again when he goes to vote. And I was just like, that's the perception. Romeo just has no clue what's going on. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's what we all are. If that's what the audience feels. And so I feel like he's very easily going to make it to the end because he just doesn't know what's really going on, it seems. And I don't even know who he's close with. He just seems to be, you know, sitting over the pot eating rice. he just doesn't seem like a threat level and worthy of being voted out or worth the vote out now that everybody's such a threat and we're so close to the end. I think he easily could secure final four and at least go to fire at this point. I really do.
Yeah, I think that he's probably the most likely person to get taken to the final three from the when we get to the fire making challenge. Where did it go wrong for Romeo? Because I really felt like that Romeo had like a really strong first half of the game. When we were sort of being shown the Ika tribe, it seemed like that he was wheeling and dealing and had something going on with everybody there. But all of a sudden, he kind of got to the merge and was kind of left for dead.
I really wonder if it is his attitude. And I it seemed that he was more enjoying, and this is just based on the edit. I don't know him as a real person, but in the edit, it seemed like he was so much more open to creating these relationships and whatnot. And at least the snippets and the audio bites that we're getting in the second half are like, I don't care about these people. I'm just eating rice. It felt very much a flip flop of my game, where the first half I'm like, get JD's ass out. I don't care about these people. And then I really focus on the relationships at merge. That's where I really like blossomed, mm-hmm. even though you didn't see it on camera. He seems the opposite of, as he's dwindling away to bones and getting tired and hungrier, he just seems to have like receded back and not caring about these people anymore. And he's even saying it. He's like, I don't care about these people. Mm-hmm. and I think that might just be where he went wrong, because people don't feel a warmth from him, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the episode last night, you know, we saw some friction that went on with Jonathan and Andrea and, you know, a little bit. And we've seen, you know, Jonathan butting heads with Lindsay a little bit as well. And, you know, Jonathan, I did think like kind of articulated it this well in his confessional, even though he then ran into the problem like in the real world about how that, you know, he needs to sort of like try to, you know, conserve his energy and nobody cares about that. And then he ends up having this, you know, dispute with the women and Mike who are trying to untangle the net. And he's like, well, like, I'll tell you how to do it. But, you know, you don't need me to do it. But then he did realize, OK, well, now I've had a, you know, this sort of disagreement about the net, and this is going to manifest into they're going to try to come after me. And I was just thinking about that. Like, is this always true in Survivor where you have like sort of like this kind of like a little like sort of like, you know, argument or dispute that'll come up in the day? Does that always turn into then does your mind go to like, I got to vote this person out?
I don't necessarily feel like it means you have to vote this person out, but you have to be on high alert of how is this person viewing me from now on? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to turn every question into, I have an example from 41.
Please do, Ricard. I mean, this is why we have former players on the podcast.
But, you know, Papaya Gate.
Yeah.
And I think it has so much less to do with Papaya Gate and more to do with the fact that I won, like, I was just getting more food. And the perception from Shan of just, I was getting something she wasn't. And I even have a confessional where I'm like, me doing well, this could, like, break us up. This could mean that she just is upset with me and doesn't want to continue with me because of her frustration with who I am in this game. And it is really tough because you feel like you could go so far with these people and you feel like, come, it's just a little tiff, blah, blah, blah. But it's not a little tiff. This is building up and people are just getting so annoyed with you. And it doesn't matter what you do anymore. They just can't stand your ass. And you do have that awareness of, oh shit, the fact that Shan is blowing up on me, we're not going to go to the end the way I thought. Like, she just doesn't like me anymore. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan having that, like, yeah, they just don't like me anymore. Yeah, you feel that way. I don't think that means get Shan out, get Lindsay out right now. But it's, oh shit, I really need to protect myself and be aware that they want to get me out at some point because they're over me.
Yeah. It's definitely something that I think about, and, you know, not just in terms of Survivor, but in real life where, you know, you sort of have like kind of like a tense conversation with that person. And I know it sort of like gets me like really thinking like, why would they talk to me that way? Like, what does that say about like how this person really thinks about me? And like, I don't know if it's necessarily like a good place to reside in, but it definitely like gets me thinking about like if I have like a tense conversation with my wife, I'm sort of like, I guess it's over, you know, she doesn't like me anymore.
Oh. You know, it's really weird with Jonathan because what he says in his confessionals makes sense for him of like, I am the biggest person here, it is physically, I don't think you can factually say this, but like, he feels it's physically the hardest for him to exist here because of the lack of food. And it's like, I get it. I can feel for you, but this is a good thing. And people shouldn't, the rest of the tribe shouldn't feel pity for you because this is good. They're not going to be like, God, we really need to feed Jonathan so he keeps doing well. They don't care about you doing well. They want you to be weak. And so his idea of feeling like people should feel not, maybe not pity, but feel, I don't want to say sorry either, just feel something for him and like see him and see his struggles. That's where I get confused about, they don't need to care about you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good thing. The weaker you get.
Yeah.
And what you need to do is show that as you're continuing to get weaker, that you continue to aid your alliance members and your closest allies and not just lay there. Drea, really, I mean, like she was talking about, she's allergic to coconut and she can't eat anything. And really, I feel like 80% of what I ate out there was coconut because there was nothing else.
Yeah.
And for her to continue to benefit her tribe mates and continue to try and bring information and move forward, like telling Omer about this plan and giving ideas and also helping out at camp while suffering and while struggling and not expecting pity, I think is what you need to do. And Jonathan seems to be missing the boat a little bit in this season.
Ricard, do you think that Jonathan can win?
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, because I just feel like he has gone out of his way to try and show that he can come up with plans and ideas,
yeah,
but they don't make sense for his alliance. And so it shows his alliance members, he's not really prioritizing every member. And last week was the perfect example. Was it last week or the week before, when he was explaining that we need to keep Marianne safe, so we're going to put votes here. But then Marianne goes, when he's talking to Lindsay, but then Marianne goes, if like he doesn't take the time to really make sure every single person in the Alliance is safe. He's only thinking about himself and maybe one other person, like Lindsay. And if he did make it to the end, and Lindsay is on the jury, and it's just like, but you're saying that you did everything in your power to keep us all safe, but I remember specifically you didn't. I remember specifically you weren't thinking about everybody. You were willing to let Marianne go. You were willing to do this just to benefit yourself, not to benefit. I think any move he could have potentially made is going to be tarnished.
Yeah.
So that's a bummer for him.
For Jonathan, yeah, I really feel like that he kind of had a very strong plan, like in the first half of the game, about how I'm going to be a provider. I'm going to help my tribe win. But now I do feel like that there is sort of like a little bit of like a selfishness to his game, in that, you know, he is no longer providing. He's in, you know, self-preservation mode. And what is he self-preserving for? So that he can perform, you know, in the individual immunity challenges. And I'm not even sure that his other thing is like, hey, use me as a shield. I will protect you. But is he shielding anyone in his group from anything at this point?
The edit doesn't show that being the case. He doesn't seem to be. He's just like, y'all want me to keep winning challenges, right? So I keep being here and being a part of it. It's just, he feels like him existing on this island is benefit enough for everyone. And so he should be given the most food. He should be able to rest, because me being in the game is me benefiting you, as opposed to me doing stuff for you and with you is benefiting you.
Yeah.
He's just missing that little piece.
In fact, Lindsay,
a big piece.
Lindsay almost ended her game so that she could compete in a challenge to prevent him from winning the immunity, so that they could probably vote him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Go Lindsay. I really wish I wouldn't have known any different, but man, to think that I could have played with Lindsay is just so unbelievable. Yeah,
can you
to
talk
me.
About that? She took Tiffany's. Tiffany took her spot. Is that correct?
Kind of. Yeah. So when we were in LA, Lindsay got COVID. Not that we didn't know each other, everyone. None of us knew each other, but Lindsay tested positive for COVID because we had a small little quarantine in COVID before we flew to Fiji. We had a small quarantine in LA before we flew to Fiji.
Yeah.
And Lindsay was supposed to be on UA with me, but she got COVID. Tiffany was flown out, but then we would have had Tiffany and Jeannie on the same tribe. And they're just way too similar age wise, like sex wise, you know, like they're the same.
Okay.
Both funny, hilarious human beings. And so they actually swapped Tiffany for Shan, who was on Yasa tribe with Liana from the very beginning.
Wow.
Shan was never supposed to be on UA. And so they swapped them out. And that's how Shan and I came to be. We were never supposed to be together. I was supposed to be with Lindsay.
Yeah.
And Tiffany was not on 41. It's pretty wild, the change of events. But and now it's even more strange for me to see the similarities with Lindsay and myself. I mean, in like the smallest way, I'm like, wow, we both were actually pretty good at challenges and we had a lot in common. And I just love her vibe. I love everything about her. And then specifically the when she won the pizza reward and she won immunity in that same episode, I won the pizza reward and I won immunity. I was like, look at us on the same little path.
Yeah. Okay. So interestingly, so we saw that pizza reward, the sanctuary trip, and you had told us about how that you got it was the same loved ones visit of we got to see it play out with the, you know, the creepy disembodied voices that were playing. And, you know, when we did your, you know, deep dive after the season, you talked all about what that was like. This time they did it and they put it into the episode. Did that hurt that they cut the loved ones moment from season 41, but put it in season 42?
You know, it was in a selfish way. I was pretty disappointed because I felt like you want to care about the players. I want to care about the players, and seeing the players happy is what makes me the happiest. I when I need a good cry, and I'm not bullshitting, I will turn on a loved one's visit just to cry and see them happy.
Wow.
Like I love that. And especially with my loved one's visit, like it was me hearing my daughter speak for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I heard her say Baba for the first time because she learned how to talk when I was out there for all these damn months. And for that to not be a part of it, I was like, wow, this is really weird to me that they're not prioritizing the humans. They're just like prioritizing the gameplay, which is really, really important. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah.
But now we got to see them have these emotional moments. And I'm just like, oh, they just want you to love these people. I'm so jealous of that. I'm so jealous. Oh, such a bummer. And they did it slightly differently. I think they did it a better way for season 42. You could hear the weird voices as we were walking in. And so we weren't even there. I was just like confused and looking around. They were already eating and settled in, and then it started.
Yeah.
And I like that a little bit better. We were just like, what the fuck? Who's saying Baba? I was very confused about the whole thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, like, what decisions, like, went into doing that because of everything that was going on with being Shan's boot episode and, you know, all of the, you know, strategy that was going on. I'm not sure if that was a factor where in last week's episode, where High went home, it was much more of like a foregone conclusion of like we had sort of like the High vote locked in and basically still a lot of time to kill in the episode last week.
Yeah. You know, I've thought a lot about who was at that reward. For my season.
Yeah.
Who was there? And I know I'm going to get a lot of DMs calling me cocky. I get them every day, people. I'm used to it. But I felt like I had such a strong story and such a strong game, at least on the screen, that by introducing another emotional element for me, it would just be like, oh, wow, this person really could win. And you would get an even closer tie with me that wasn't necessary because I wasn't the winner. And I didn't need more time to be showcased. And then you're getting an emotional moment with Shan, but she's going to be voted out in 10 minutes. And then I really thought about Xander and Heather and how Heather was purpled. And so we don't need an emotional moment for her because for whatever reason, Ed-wise, they didn't want her to have that. And then Xander, everybody thinks Xander's robbed. And so if he has an emotional moment where you're seeing his family and his sister, it like, you know... Mm-hmm. They just didn't need us to have any more of a reason to be rooted for, specifically Xander and me, since we made it a little further. They didn't need more of a reason for us to be rooted for. And so it makes a lot of sense why they cut it. It's just still a difficult thing to swallow.
Yeah, in that episode last week, we saw High go home. I have seen on Instagram that you and High seem to be friends in real life. I would love to know how did you come to know High?
We just met in New Orleans a long time ago. That's all.
Yeah. Okay.
We're just real life friends.
Okay. What did you think about the game that your friend High played? So it's interesting that I thought you were going to say like, oh, okay, well, you know, I knew he had done Survivor, and then we, you know, linked up. So you knew High from before Survivor.
Yeah.
Yes. Interesting.
So High is from Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta. I go to New Orleans every few weeks. He lives in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, our paths crossed, and so High is a lovely human being, and when I saw his name, I was like, on the leak, because I saw,
right.
What's that? Whatever. I saw the cast leaked and I was like, wait a minute. I'm so confused.
Right.
I know this person. And I went through my phone and I was like, yeah, I know this person. It was really cool to see his game. He reminded me a lot of Shan, and like, he just like reminded me a lot of Shan in the game. Really savvy, really aware, but then, you know, towards the end, missed the awareness of that day. And that's just the edit. I don't know. I don't know if he, we don't talk game, but yeah, he reminded me of Shan. And it's weird to see these parallels with people, because all I thought throughout the game was, wow, he really is so similar to Shan. Like, damn, he's really on top of it. He's working with the right people. The right people are bouncing ideas off of him as well. Like, this is going great. And then he was actually booted the same episode as Shan. And I was just like,
both
this is
vegans,
so weird.
I saw them chatting on Twitter. Yeah.
Both vegan. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Ricard, has your mom kept up with season 42?
No, she has not. She moved across the country And she's like doing her own thing. She sold her house, moved away. I've only seen her like once in the last 8 months. Yeah. Okay. She has not watched Survivor, but if I'm fortunate enough to play again, she will be back confused as ever, trying to figure out who the fuck all these people are.
Well, but that she had gotten you into the show in the first place, right?
Yeah. She's very much like a puppy dog where she's really into something and then she's like, what? And then she'll be over it and move on. And that's, I feel like I've taken that trait. I'm all over the place.
Ricard, I have questions for you from the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast that I would love to get into with you. Okay. How about, you know, this was the last week for the shot in the dark. Okay. We saw more shot in the dark action this season. Yeah. Mike Christensen wants to know, with the shot in the dark expiring this week, I think it'd be interesting to hear it eulogized a bit, at least for this production cycle, from someone who played with it in the game. Okay, the shot in the dark, you like it?
No.
You could be indifferent, I mean, also. Yeah,
I don't really care either way for it. I never thought of it as, I mean, I don't think most of us, and I might be overstepping, I don't think most of us thought of it as a big deal in my season, as a big thing to be focused on. I remember there was one day it was pouring rain and Shan, hers fell out of her pocket and it was like gone. She couldn't find it. And she was just like, oh, well, like she literally didn't care that it was missing.
Yeah.
We were just like, whatever. But I think the big element was not necessarily feeling like it would help us. I never felt it would help me in any capacity. I just knew I didn't want somebody else to use it. That was my big motivation for how Shan and I navigated the first half of the game. That was the most important thing to me to make sure it was not used. I'm very confused about why it ends at this point. I think it should go all the way to the same point that you can use an idol. I don't know why. Like, why cut it out now and then still be able to use all the other advantages? And I think it should actually be upped to make it even more dramatic, honestly.
Wow.
Like, make it be 1 in 5. Make it be 1 in 5 when there are 5 people left. Make it be 1 in 4 when there are 4 people left. Why not? If we're doing all this other crazy shit, do or die and hourglasses, why not go all in?
Yeah. So that my thinking on it has always been that they don't actually want people to hit the shot in the dark. They just want there to be blindsides every episode. And I think that so by putting the shot in the dark into the game, which I actually think that the season 41 cast seemed to be spending a lot more time thinking about than the season 42 cast. The season 42 cast was like, there's 2 people we want to send out. We don't care if they use the shot in the dark. Whereas the season 41 cast seemed to go to great lengths to make sure that people were not playing the shot in the dark.
Massive. I mean, the amount of, it was pretty overwhelming for me telling the amount of stories I did to ensure that people felt so safe to not use it. Like it was just like the biggest priority. And I think it's because at least the way our game just shook out, there wasn't, for me and who I wanted to go home, there really wasn't a backup plan most of the time. I had my eyes dead set on one person and I didn't want anybody else to go, period. I wasn't really open-minded to others. And so this idea of them possibly being safe and then a random person getting the stray bullet wasn't cool with it. Mm-hmm. So that was really my biggest motivation. Everybody in this season seems very like, whatever, the other person could go, NBD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the mindset I was in. Maybe if I was on a different season, that could have been the case and I wouldn't have cared as much. But the stakes seemed so much bigger for the person that I wanted to go to all of a sudden be safe. And I really got to see that firsthand with Do or Die. It was essentially the same damn thing. This person is safe that I didn't want to be safe out of the blue because of a twist. And now it's like, great. Now Liana has to go. That sucks. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I don't want random other person to go. And we already started on such small tribes in the first place. It's a big deal if somebody else goes home when there's only 5 people on a tribe.
Mm-hmm. Dan Sinensky wants to ask you, are there any strategic lessons to take away from both Knowledge is Power and Do or Die playing out in the same exact way in season 41 and season 42, evading the idol steal by giving the idol to someone else to hold, and the Do or Die player getting immunity, even though they stuck with their original choice? Is there any sort of like takeaways that you have from the way that these two twists played out back to back?
Yeah, and I kind of touched on it earlier, the fact that you should not tell somebody all the rules of an advantage. They should not have every rule laid out for them, because the fine print is the most important print. And that's when something can be used against you.
Yeah.
JD had his extra vote, and he was smart and making up an element of it that said it could not be transferred to anybody else. And he used Sarah Lacina as an example. Sarah gave, you know, an extra vote to Ceree, I think it was, or some advantage to Ceree years ago.
I think it was the steal a vote.
Steal a vote, yeah. And the fact that it wasn't transferable was a really big piece in that. And so JD was very bright in making sure to tell us it's not transferable. Nobody else can use it. And him make it. But I went through his bag and I saw that that wasn't actually on the piece of paper. He should have hidden it better. That's why we ended up taking it, because he had lied about that part.
Yeah. Is that one of the reasons why you two were so mad about him, where I guess you'd already discovered that he had had the thing, but it was like, oh, see, this is another thing he's lying.
He's just such a liar. Yeah. He just kept making up lie after lie after lie. But that was honestly, I think, his best lie, to ensure that we knew it was not transferable. That was, I gave him A+. And then a D- for not hiding it right afterwards for me to be able to verify this.
Right. And an F for letting it like fall out of his pants in front of Shane.
Oh my gosh. It's sticking out of his underwear. It was so funny.
Yeah. Okay. Tommy Guam wants to know, should people who are voted out be able to talk and give an assessment, or should it be silence? How does Drea's player assessment on the way out influence remaining castaways, if any? So that was really an interesting exit from the game for Drea. And I just wanted to know, first off, did you like that? And do you think that that is sort of like the way that things are evolving in terms of people going out of the game?
Two things. Just on like a entertainment level, I thought, and I'm really going to think about this in the future, I'm sure. Her exit was one of my favorite exits I've ever seen on Survivor, ever. I thought it was just so fun. I thought she gave the perfect amount of information, the kiss of death to Mike that I was given by Shan. You know,
Do you think it was a kiss of death? Is that how it was intended?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I really do. I thought it was really fun to watch. Now, game-wise, I'm shocked that this is something that exists. I don't know why it's permitted. I don't think you should be allowed to speak once you stand up. And my reasoning is consistency.
Yeah.
If you're not allowed to stand up and hand your idol to somebody else because you are officially out of the game, at that moment, you are officially a jury member who are not allowed to speak. You are done. And so for you to be able to stand up and give insight into the game when a jury person over there is not allowed to speak, acknowledge, smile, wink, wave, nothing. How does this isn't consistent.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to give an idol to my alliance member over here after getting blindsided, but I can tell you that that person should go. It just doesn't make sense to me. I just don't think that's consistent with the rules of Survivor. Do I enjoy watching it? Yes.
Yeah.
Entertainment, two thumbs up. But I think it actually kind of breaks the rules. You're done. You are out of the game.
Yeah, it's such an interesting discussion. And I remember talking about this a couple of years back with Shannon Gus. I believe it was in Australian Survivor season 4, where Andy, who came back and played, you know, Dave's got an idol, everybody, which I think was not even true. I think was which I think was a lie. And we talked about it then, of like, what should happen? Like, should there just be like a trap door that sort of like opens up and swallows you? Like, how could you enforce players not giving the information, especially in the era of knowledge is power and you know, all the secrets and secret phrases. Yeah. And, you know, if you build a game around like secrets now, how do you prevent the person who gets voted out from just blurting out all the secrets?
You know, I really just think the only rule that needs to be changed is that you're allowed to give an advantage away after you're voted out, and make it a very clear rule of, like, in this time, I have announced who's out of the game, but your torch is still on fire over here. So until you walk over and the torch snuffer puts out your fire, you are officially a member of the game still.
Yes.
And you, it's free reign. I think my only issue is the fact that you can't give away an idol after you're voted out because you're out of the game, but then you're allowed to do all this other shit. Like, mm-hmm. I my mind is very black and white, and I just don't understand that part. It really bothers me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never really thought about that. So you want to be able to bequeath the advantages. And does that sort of help or hurt, sort of like, because I think that the show always wants to try to like help the underdogs. But like in the scenario where like if the underdogs got like a big player out of the game who got blindsided with an idol, then if that person could then give their idol to another alliance member, as opposed to then having it be a free for all for the idol in the next episode. I'm just trying to think if that's better or worse.
I think it's worse, but I think it's at least consistent. And Jeff makes enough announcements in between what we see on screen,
yeah,
that he knows how to tell people what the rules are. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for him to say, look, after I read these votes, don't say a word.
Mm-hmm.
Do not speak, or you will not be on the jury. Like a threatening, like, you cannot do this, to ensure that you're silent until you snuff your torch. I mean, he even made a very stern announcement to us of, I don't want to see hearts. I don't want to see nicknames. I don't want to see smiley faces. You write down the person's name.
We had a frowny face last night.
I know. He specifically said, you be respectful. This is not a time for drawing your favorite mascot from a sports team. Like, just write down the person's name.
Yeah.
And so if he's stern enough to give us the rules and tell us like how it is, I don't think it's unreasonable for him to be like, look, you can't give away your advantages, and you also can't talk. You can't blow anybody else's game up. You're done. Mm-hmm. Quietly get your torch and walk your ass over here.
Yeah.
I just want consistency. That's it. That's all I want.
Yeah. And, you know, I hadn't really thought about that so much, but it's also like where Jeff highlights it of like, wow, Drea, that was amazing. So obviously Jeff loved it in the moment. And I do think that there is like a sort of like, okay, well, as a future Survivor player, okay, I've seen that Jeff has like, you know, given this person praise. Okay. This is, I think, how they want you to handle your business. Like, I do think that we will see more players have this kind of an exit from the game.
Oh, not for me. If I ever play again, I'm going to be a bitter Betty still. I'm not going to be like, oh my God, that was so fun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I think that High really sort of like, in the way that he went out of the game, that I think that really sort of like, you know, really put that out there into this group of like, you know, being such a good sport about being voted out. Listen, Ricard, I would not be a good sport about it either.
You know, I think it just really shows the cast as a whole.
Yeah.
The type of people they are. And I don't know if it's real or if it's for the cameras, but they, like, when, what was it? Lindsay and Omer, I remember they did not get the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Yeah. And they were just like, that was a fun challenge. Yeah. We had a good time.
We were
time.
Right there. I mean, you what know, a day.
And,
yeah.
You know, they're just lighthearted in general. And I just thought back to mine where, like, literally people are swearing at each other. Everybody's mad. The papaya thing happens. Like, we were not those people.
Yeah. Ricard, Xander W. asks, not Xander H from your season.
Sure, sure.
Xander with a Z. Okay. I was the loudest critic of Do or Die coming back this season to potentially rob us of an exciting final 7 vote. I think they should do it at final 10, Xander writes. I was also the loudest cheerleader when Lindsay secured her safety. How am I supposed to feel? Should I just shut up and enjoy Survivor?
I think
we hold these two things in our hand.
I think we should all shut up and enjoy Survivor. I think we should just like be excited by what happens and not be too critical of every single thing. It's fun to talk about it, but not like really judge it so intensely that we are like, I hate this. Just be like, oh, they could have done that better, I think. Mm-hmm. But that was still fun to watch. I totally agree with it being done earlier in the game because you've worked so hard to get to this point. And now a twist like that can just rid you of everything you work for, all those relationships and whatnot. I think that is a bummer for it to be so close to Final Five, close to the finale. But yeah, no, I think it's fine to just enjoy what you're seeing and have conflicting feelings. It's just fine.
Yeah, I do think that if you were going to keep the do or die, pushing it back further into the season, I think would be maybe a more interesting way to go with it. Like instead of doing like the rice negotiation at the final 11, then maybe having it like further back there. So then you do have more of a likelihood that like four or five people are at least going to play in the challenge as opposed to two people. In the challenge where it's just like, okay, well, you came in second place, but also you're going to be eliminated from the game tonight.
I honestly think Do or Die is going to come back. Yeah. I really, really do. But I think it's going to be, how do I say it? I think it's going to be something where they are not made privy to the information, and it's going to ruin what I think is the one good element of Do or Die. The fact that there's transparency. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be like season 41's hourglass twist, where it's just like, oh, by the way, FYI, the person that dropped earlier, you know, that person over there, you're playing Do or Die tonight. And I think it's going to be an unfair element added in.
Yeah.
So that nobody sits out of a challenge. Which is, but I think that's the one way they're going to reintroduce it. I really do. Because why? They love a good twist.
They love the twists. They do love the twists. Okay. Mark Levy, what does Ricard think that Omer has to do to win the game after his game possibly getting blown up tonight? I'm not sure if I agree about Omer's game possibly being blown up. But what do you think? Can you sort of like give me the roadmap for Omer here at the final six to get to the end?
I think he needs to do what he's doing with making sure to put a target on Jonathan's back, to put a target on Mike's back. And I think he needs to add a target on to Lindsay's back. Mm-hmm. But where I think at least the edit is making him have a shortcoming is not creating relationships with, I don't want to say goats. Like I'm not, that's not my intention to be disrespectful, but the people who are less likely to get votes. And I think he needs to really prioritize final three, final four deals with those people. Cause I don't see him making relationships with the people he wants to sit next to. Mm-hmm. I just see him painting targets and still not having any other relationships with people he's not deeming as a big target.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He should be making a great relationship with Romeo right now, since Romeo seems to stand out as being the least likely to get votes at this time.
Yeah.
Why are we not seeing him prioritize Romeo as a friend, as an ally? I don't understand that.
Yeah, I feel like we at points we got that, but no, not a lot of content from Romeo and Omer. Mm-hmm. Okay, Patrick Wells has a question. Okay, what do you think of this? Because once upon a time, you were thinking along these lines that Patrick Wells wants to know, would it be a good move for Omer to make a fake replica idol and try to give that back to Mike with the real parchment? Would Mike definitely remember what the original looked like, or is this something that Omer could pull off? Well, this would be pretty incredible.
I think he could fully do it, especially the idols this season are the same as my season.
Yes.
They are bracelets with the same beads as our tree mail bracelets. Do I have one here? So all of our tree mail, and we talked about this because you didn't have all the stuff in your last season. The tree mail is wrapped in a bracelet.
Okay.
That is the exact same as the idols. Now, our three idols in our game just had a glass bead. And so as long as he can find some glass bead, do it, honey. Like, make that fake idol. Give it back to Mike.
This would be wild. And now, Mike has been through it with Daniel losing his idol and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you think, would he even like, you know, hold it up in case the, like, okay, let me just see. Hold on a second. Are you pulling a fast one, or do you think he would just like not even think about it?
I don't. Mike obviously is a very lovely and bright individual. Yeah. I don't know if he would super focus on like the beads though. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there's a way to make this happen.
Because when you and Shan basically, you know, swapped out the idol on Jeannie, I mean, Jeannie had never seen the genuine thing. So it was just sort of like, okay, well, this is the idol.
She had seen Brad's.
I guess she saw Brad's, but not really. It's like super up close. Like, this is like, you know, Ocean's 11 type stuff now of like, we're going to give him back the parchment with the fake idol.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be great.
It would be amazing.
Oh, man. It would be great.
It would be an all-time Survivor move. You know, somebody else that has an idol that we haven't talked too much about is Marianne. Yeah, I would love to know like where you think Marianne figures into all of this.
I feel like we're not getting a lot of Marianne gameplay so much as just really great content about how lovely she is.
Yes.
Like, we got the toenail scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
So random.
How were your toenails? You didn't lose any on Survivor?
I did not lose any. Yeah. I lost half of my pinky. I lost the skin of half of my pinky during the merge challenge. It was, do you know what degloved, the phrase degloved is?
Yes.
I was degloved. Oh my God. Those of you at home who don't know, means
with the ball.
Skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, the skin is ripped off, and what's left is the finger, the bone, the tendons around.
Yeah,
not the skin.
Yeah.
But toenails, they were doing pretty good. They were sticking on tight.
I mean, you were able to win the immunity challenge due to your toe dexterity.
You know, I will say, Marianne gave me one of my favorite quotes of the game. Of her saying, me finding the idol the day after using an idol shows me that I'm playing both like a good game and a morally good game. I love that she is so secure in like, if I do good things, my path forward will be great. And if I'm a good person, the world will recognize that if it's meant to be. And I love that attitude. I think that Marianne has an unbelievable understanding of the game, because when she was there are so many moments where I think back and I'm like, I'm lucky that certain things turned out the way they did, but I was just so scared and so nervous and so overwhelmed that I wasn't thinking about very small details or other elements or other factors. And when she used the idol, her and Drea both use idols simultaneously, for her to have the awareness of how it would look to everyone if I don't play it. And I know that's a burden that was brought into the game.
Yeah.
With their race. Like, that is something that was already there before this. But to also be able to apply this knowledge in real time, it's one thing to know, like, there are these things I can't do because of this and how the perception of the fan will be. And then when it's actually happening in real life, like, forget all of that, because you're so overwhelmed by the situation. For her to stick with knowing what's right, I'm using air quotes, and what she needs to do in a high stress situation, and for perception wise of how she could be viewed as a player and her path forward, I think she's so savvy and so aware. And it's pretty wild that we're not seeing both her and Omer be coined, and Lindsay be coined, as huge threats in the game. When they seem all very aware.
Mm-hmm. And she also, like, now with Drea off the board, okay, so it's sort of been overlooked that Marianne has both an extra vote and an idol here at the final six. Do you see a path for her to get to the final three?
I do. I 100% do. I think with right now, the fact that she has this extra vote, she can manipulate one of Omer's big threats that he has targeted as a big threat. She can maneuver the votes to go whichever way she wants from his threats that he's put in that legwork for. And then get to final five. And then she has that idol to make it to final four. And then, you know, who's left? The people that got to fire. You know, I think she actually has a very clear path forward with all the targets that still exist in the game.
Yeah, I just think the thing that's working against her is that, one, I don't know if anybody is like really like clamoring to go to the final three with her. And then also she doesn't have the, you know, to quote something that Angie Kant had said once, her goat-tential, I feel like, is not great because she is such a like bright light where you could get into the final three with Marianne and she could put on a performance where you're like, oh my God, I have to like, I love the Marianne.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I felt about Shan. And, but like, to me, it didn't matter. Now Shan did put in a lot of work, but it didn't matter if I put in more work or less work than Shan, because Shan was so lovable.
Yeah.
That she's going to win over me the end. And that it very easily could be a situation for Marianne of like, but Marianne has also put in work. She's found two idols. She has this advantage. She has been a part of like the story the majority of the time after starting on the bottom where she was almost gone instead of Mariah, you know, like she has put in the work. And especially when I'm thinking about who's left in the game, if they continue forward with this idea of Mike being a big threat and Jonathan being a threat, and those two go, let's say those two go, who's left? Omer and Lindsay and Romeo and Marianne. Romeo is unlikely to get votes there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Lindsay and Omer were to go to fire or something, like there is a path forward there. If for Marianne, if Omer isn't in the final three, I think.
Ricard, who is out in this next episode? Who's out at the final five?
Ooh. Who's out at final five? I feel like it's going to be Jonathan or Omer, because Omer, there's only so long that you can pull all these strings and not be seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that.
Yeah, I'm probably leaning more towards Jonathan, because unless Omer's game really gets blown up, I don't think that there are enough people who are looking to get rid of him where I feel like that. I think Jonathan has outlived his usefulness as a shield. That being said, you know, he is a very real threat to win immunity at the final six. And I think that that's the scenario where I could see Omer in trouble where, okay, he's one of only three people that doesn't have an idol. And if Jonathan's immune and Romeo's an obvious goat, that could be the doomsday scenario for Omer.
Yeah. I just feel like every single player, even though Lindsay's was because of Do or Die, every single player except for Omer has had a back and forth of potentially going home except for him. And so I just, if he was the winner, I just can't see a path forward where they never show the struggle for him.
Yeah,
that doesn't compute for me edit wise to give somebody an edit where you don't see the potential for them to have almost gone, but then they overcome it. And so that's why edit wise, I would think gameplay wise, he could be a shoo-in to be a winner. But edit wise, I'm like, we haven't seen his struggle. This is too good to be true. It must just be a like, you're blown up, you're done kind of thing. And so that's why I feel like it's 6 or 5 for Omer because of that.
Ricard, I appreciate you so much coming on here and talking about everything that's going on with me. Anything else you want to say about Survivor today?
Nothing. I continue to love Survivor. It has been such a joy to get to watch a show again and be out of it, you know, kind of be out of the loop a little bit, living my normal life and just enjoying what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Last night's episode was great. Drea, I loved your exit so much, even though I have conflicted feelings on rules of the game. One of the best exits ever. So much fun to watch. Hi, you were such a joy to watch. I'm so proud of you. You made our family proud. I just love it. I love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Ricard, anything you want to tell the listeners to check out?
Even though I'm not currently recapping the Australian episodes because there's not a season on right now.
Right.
Continue to subscribe to Drop Your Buffs podcast or follow them on Drop Your Buffs Pod. I'm a guest co-host on that show. It's so great. Sean and Evan Ross Katz are phenomenal hosts, and they just did an interview with Parvati last week. So, so fun. I think just follow me on the Instagram, Ricard Foyer. I'm the only Ricard in the U.S.
Wow. Okay. All right, Ricard, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here with me, and have a good one, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it, Ricard Foyer on the podcast. Really appreciated Ricard coming on with me. Ricard got up very early. It was early for him on the West Coast, but I really appreciated him coming on and talking about all of that with us. So that was a really fun chat about everything going on here in Survivor 42. So be on the lookout for everything else coming up in our Survivor podcast feed. Of course, you can get that all when you go to robinswebsite.com/Survivor Feed. Thank you for spending this time here with us today. I always appreciate you, the listeners, being here. Got to talk to so many of our listeners and patrons when I was in New York last week. And it really just means the world to me when I hear from people just about how much a part of their lives Robin's podcast has been over the years. Just really reminds me about how much fun I get to have doing this, and all of you who are listening to these podcasts as they come out, day after day, talking about this show that we all love. So thank you again for listening. Check out everything else we have going on over at robinswebsite.com. Thank you for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.